Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the game tonight. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, the best ever. Indeed, second to none all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Our play-by-play call of the day, Eagles fans, you're going to love it. Aaron Rodgers, for the first time in 212 attempts, is picked off.
Rodgers back. He pumps. He fires. It is intercepted on the deflection. Intercepted. Eagles have the ball. Nigel Bradham out across the 20, and this game is as good as over.
Eagles 2-2, and now the Packers are 3-1. All right, Penn State and Maryland tonight. Let's break it down on Pro Football Focus. Anthony Treese joins us from PFF. Anthony, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Well, no, it's great to have you on. Let's, first of all, talk about tonight's game. Penn State's going to play Maryland. That game will be on Fox Sports 1 this evening and here on the network. What is your initial breakdown of these two teams? Let's start with Maryland. Obviously, a team with some speed. McFarland, Leak, when you look at their numbers as running backs, what really stands out to you about them?
Yeah, Maryland definitely has one of the more diverse and elusive backfields in the country. There's no question about that. They can pretty much give it to any one of those guys and come out successful when they're trying to run the ball. Really focusing on McFarland, he's grading out at a 75 right now, 75.0 rushing grade, and he's forcing missed tackles at nearly 30% of his carries, which is a fairly good rate. And then you look at Leak, on the other hand, he's just been lights out running the ball for him. You know, he has five runs of 10-plus yards on 19 carries, and 84.0 rushing grade, and forcing a missed tackle nearly 40% of the time. So Penn State's definitely going to have to worry about those guys, because no matter who's back there, you know, it could be dangerous. They can explode and break away for a big play.
Yeah, that's what when Jack Cam and I were looking at the tape, Anthony, we both talked about, well, they get a yard, 2 yards, 3 yards, a yard, 4 yards, and then boom, 40 yards. So as they get that crease, they go, and they've got the speed to fly through there. I want to get to Josh Jackson, the quarterback, the transfer out of Virginia Tech, not coming off his A game against Temple. How does Josh Jackson grade out for you?
Yeah, it is not great. He hasn't been able to limit those negatively graded throws. Right now he's got that third highest rate in the Big Ten, and overall he's at 58.7, which is very, very poor. Maryland runs a lot of play action. He's been moderately successful. When he's not running play action, that's when we see more of those negatively graded throws come out. He has all three of his turnover-worthy plays have come when they haven't ran play action. And so, you know, when we're evaluating quarterbacks too, we really want to hone in on how their performance was when they're in a clean pocket. And when we look at Josh Jackson in a clean pocket, it's really not that great. He has none of those really, you know, jaw-dropping dimes that you see from some of these other college quarterbacks. He's gotten zero of those. He's got two of those bad turnover-worthy plays. So Josh Jackson, I don't think we're going to see him be much of a threat to State tonight as much as that backfield will be.
Anthony Treese joining us from Pro Football Focus. Defensively, they've got two transfers over there. Keandre Jones, outside linebacker from Ohio State, and Shaq Smith, defensive end, outside linebacker from Clemson. What kind of impact, grade-wise, have they made on the Maryland defense?
Yeah, this Maryland defense definitely has been, I guess, up and down. And when you look at Shaq Smith, he hasn't been great, whether it's been in pass rush or run defense. His grade's sitting there hovering around, you know, 65. He's been good tackling-wise, but really there's just nothing on this Maryland defense that's really, you know, kind of like, oh, wow. That's a good player. Besides, you know, you look at the linebacker position, you see a guy like Chance Campbell. You know, he's been solid in coverage. He's got a 90.8 grade But other than that, it's very depleted over there, and we may see, you know, Clifford finally have that big night against a fairly weak defense.
All right, so let's talk about Sean Clifford since you brought him up, Anthony. When you look at what Sean has done so far through three games, what is the grade out on your part with him?
Yeah, so we definitely did have higher expectations from him heading into the year. And while he hasn't played the most difficult schedule, you know, he played against Idaho, kind of a cupcake. You know, he put up 79, but then you get a team like Buffalo, who's got a pretty good pass rush. You know, they have Khalil Mack's little brother, Ladarius Mack, and you saw him kind of have some big-time plays in that game. And then you have Malcolm Kuntz, Taylor Riggins. And you go to Pittsburgh, and based off of last week, it looks like a pretty good win off of that, even though it was only by 7 points. So on the year, he has a 73.5 grade, and he has been able to limit those negatively graded throws. You know, he has the fourth lowest rate in the Big Ten, which is solid. He knows no turnover-worthy plays, but he hasn't been able to generate those positively graded throws either. You know, he has a handful of them, but none of those really jaw-dropping ones. But we see Clifford really be at his peak is when he's throwing to his receiver with a step-plus separation. And while it kind of seems obvious that most quarterbacks would be, you'd be surprised. You know, some quarterbacks actually are kind of the opposite. But with Clifford, he has a 90.1 grade when throwing to a receiver with a set plus of separation. His passer rating is above 150. He has 14.1 yards per attempt. And when you have a guy like KJ at wide receiver who's a serious deep threat, and both have a big night tonight against Maryland.
Right. Now, I want to 2 weeks ago, Pro Football Focus, you know, every single week they go out and they put out who they're at position, their players of the week. Coming out of the Pitt game, the guy listed in middle linebacker was Jan Johnson as to how he graded out. Now, a lot of people wouldn't think that. Again, Jan Johnson's not the flashy guy. But what allowed him in the Pitt game to be a guy that graded out as well as he did to rank among the top three linebackers in the conference that week?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we would be lying to say we weren't expecting it either. But he's been really solid this year outside of the Pitt game as well. But in that game specifically, he had a 90.4 coverage grade. He picked up a pressure. He had a forced fumble, a couple defensive stops, and he had no missed tackles on his attempts. Put that all together, that's a solid performance from a linebacker. And when you look at his entire year as a whole, you know, he's been solid in nearly every facet. Like in that Pitt game, he was solid in coverage, but he has a 90.6 run defensive grade on the year. His overall grade is the fourth highest among linebackers in the nation right now. And he's been getting those, you know, good tackles where you see, where like, well, I mean, that obviously stopped the momentum. He has 10 of those right now. So he's definitely been a surprise, and we wouldn't be surprised to see him make more of our Team of the Weeks in the near future.
Because obviously people look at a Micah Parsons and Cam Brown, Brown being the experienced senior linebacker and Parsons being the five-star. But Parsons was second team that week. So have you seen, as Parsons has gone along, better grades on a weekly basis for Parsons moving forward?
Yeah, we definitely have. You know, that first week against Idaho, he should have played better than he actually did. He only had a 66.6 grade. Granted, right, he didn't play a lot of snaps. But then he went into Buffalo. He was solid against the run. He had an 80.2 run defensive grade that week, 5 defensive stops, and he kind of faltered a little bit in coverage. However, when you move on to the Pittsburgh game, you know, he was pretty solid all around. He had an 89.0 run defensive grade that week, and he's been a solid tackler all year long. And I think that's the really key theme of this Penn State linebacker unit, is that they're great tacklers. They can get after the run, and they've been decent in coverage, although they can improve in that aspect. But their run defense is solid, and so that's going to be a key matchup to watch, just based off that backfield we talked about earlier with McFarland and Leak. That's something to keep an eye on tonight.
Yeah, you have to be on those guys the entire time. As I mentioned earlier, they're one play away from 40. All right. I hope you don't mind asking a couple of national evaluations, and I'll give you an opportunity to make sure you're on track with your notes. I'm going to talk about Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa for a moment, and I want to start with Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence has, 7 touchdowns and 5 picks this season. Obviously, he comes into the season, Anthony, with all this hype, and a lot of people talk about Heisman trophies. He probably should have been the first player taken in the draft. And, of course, the list goes on and on. He's off to a good start. What do the numbers tell you about Trevor Lawrence, and what's keeping him from that good start to great start?
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence has definitely been underwhelming so far this year. I mean, last year he was clear-cut the best quarterback in the nation. We all recognize that. Whether you're a general football fan or a diehard, you could easily tell this kid was something special and he has a bright future. But yeah, it's been rather disappointing. He has right now just seven turnover-worthy plays, which is far more than what he had last year. And so when you look at that 62.0 grade and you look at who they've really played, and you're just kind of thinking, what's wrong? He has all the pieces in place. He's got Justin Ross, T. Higgins. He has all the weapons. That team all around is even better than Alabama as a whole. So he has everything in place, and he just can't avoid those negatively graded throws I've been talking about, which is something that we haven't really seen from him. You know, he's shown some flashes of what he did last year when he bails on the pocket, but it's definitely been an underwhelming year from Lawrence.
And he has the running game to go with it. I mean, he can do a play-action fake to Travis Etienne, and he's going to freeze everybody because Etienne's been off to a great start. So now let's get to Tua. Tua, again, continues to throw high-volume touchdown passes. And, again, Tua has been able to stay away from throwing interceptions, which has been his MO his entire career. When you break down his numbers, what are they telling you about what he's done in his start?
Yeah, so when you look at Tua, I mean, from what he did last year, he's definitely regressed a little bit, but not as much as Lawrence. He's still sitting at a solid 84.3 grade, okay. And a lot of that may have to do with the schedule they played. But, you know, last year he was unreal under pressure, which is a very volatile stat in a sense where there's different kinds of pressure, and so it's not easily translatable year to year as much as his performance in a clean pocket. But so we have seen a few big-time throws from him, those jaw-dropping throws that we're used to seeing. He has a couple turnover-worthy plays, but nothing to be alarmed of. But we have to keep in mind that he definitely has the deepest wide receiver core in the entire country. It might even be one of the best we've ever seen. I mean, there's literally four first-round talents in there with Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devonta Smith. They've all shown flashes of insane play. So we have to keep that in mind, too, when we're evaluating a guy like Tua. When you hear about NFL teams maybe tanking and losing an entire season on purpose for a guy like this, when you look at the data, you kind of have to think to yourself, like, I would do this just because it is unreal accuracy. He's been pinpoint. He's been a solid deep passer. Haven't gotten a lot of credit from that. But I think a lot of people are writing him off just because of the weapons he has around him. But definitely he is the real deal.
It's interesting because the three wideouts that you mentioned for Alabama, on a lot of teams, any one of the three would be the team's number one guy. I'd be the number one threat. That's amazing. Game of the weekend to you that you're really anxious to see and break down numerically is?
Ooh, I would probably have to go with Virginia Notre Dame.
I thought you were going to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because, you know, the Irish coming off that close game to Georgia, and then you have Virginia, you have arguably one of the top cornerbacks in the nation has kind of been underperforming in Bryce Hall. You know, just to see how Ian Book, you know, is he going to target him? Who's he going to line up on? Is that going to be Chase Claypool? How is he going to perform against him? So there's definitely a lot of interesting facets to that game. And right now, the market has it at, you know, they're favoring the Irish at 11 points. But we would have Virginia covering with a pretty decent edge. So there's a lot of intriguing, you know, matchups within this. But ultimately, you have to go with the Fighting Irish, you would think. They're sixth overall in our ELO ranking. Virginia is 18th. So this is going to be a better matchup than a lot of people think.
Anthony, first time we've had you with us. True pleasure. Thanks so much for everything.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Anthony Treach of Pro Football Focus, breaking down some college football for us. Great to have the Pro Football Focus segment every week here on the Steve Jones Show. We're also getting set for Penn State, Maryland tonight. 6:30 will be the airtime with Steve and Jack and Matt McGloin and Roger Corey here on WKOK. Kickoff just after 8. Let's get the Maryland perspective of tonight's game from the Washington Post. Here is Steve's conversation with Maryland Terps beat writer Emily Giambalvo.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so through three games, what do you know about Maryland?
That they've been very inconsistent. You know, those first two games gave so much promise in terms of what this offense can be, and it's not that Howard is any formidable opponent, and then maybe we don't know enough about Syracuse yet either. But then it just all completely flopped against Temple, and Maryland really struggled to have a functional day on offense. You know, they could have won the game. They had eight chances to just skin the end zone from inside the 10, and they couldn't do it on any of those. And there were just moments where you felt like, this isn't the offense that's going to win games as the season progresses. So I do think, I mean, this Penn State game is important. We'll maybe give some clarity as to whether that was an outlier or not. But yeah, it's been a weird season because there was so much excitement after those two games, and then it kind of fell back down to earth 2 weeks ago.
Over the past couple of years, the issue for Maryland has been when they've had their starting quarterback, they can go out, for example, and beat Texas, home or away. But then as the season is gone, attrition has hit their quarterback spot. Josh Jackson is the starter this year, the transfer from Virginia Tech. What does he lend to the position that Mike Locksley likes?
Yeah, I mean, there really have been just so many injuries, and it's taken a toll. I think that is what Maryland was missing last year. Maryland has a lot of really talented players at receiver and running back. They just didn't have that missing piece of quarterback. So I think Josh Jackson solves a lot of those problems. I mean, I like him as a quarterback. I think he's one of those steady, reliable guys, you know, isn't going to be the best quarterback in the conference or, you know, anything close to that stature. But I think he's solid. He didn't have a good game against Temple, but he comes in and he's like very chill about it and just says it's not going to faze him and he's going to be back. And I think Mike Locksley really likes what he can do with the RPO game, which is something that worked really well in those first two games. And he's been really accurate apart from some moments against Temple. He's looked good. He seems to make good decisions. And I do think he'll be able to really help elevate this offense under Locksley.
And he's a coach's son.
Yeah. I mean, Locksley loves that. He always talks about that.
Yeah. All right. The left tackle that goes out, Davis, on the left side. What kind of – it's one thing about certain programs where their starters are just – they can be terrific. And if they have to go into the bench, it's not quite the same. Losing him, Davis, what does that mean for the depth on that football team?
Yeah, I think that's really concerning to me. He's the right guard. But Maryland, you know, during fall camp, Locksley said at one point that he only had seven offensive linemen who he felt really good about. And, you know, that's kind of a red flag when you're sitting there in mid-August and you have a coach saying, you know, he could hardly fill out a two deep. So the offensive line has always been kind of that point of concern. And then when you have an injury to a starter like that, he's the most experienced guy on the offensive line, which is bringing in a few new guys to the fold. I think it's something that Maryland should be worried about. And it was an issue against Temple. You know, Josh Jackson was under pressure a lot. He was sacked a handful of times. And I think that group could be the difference. And it seems like Ellis McKinney is going to be the guy who takes that spot. Right. And he's someone who Mike Locksley has called him a six starter. I mean, he can pretty much play any position. He's a veteran player, just hasn't had a lot of starts. But he should be able to kind of fill that void. But then, you know, you always want to have guys behind that. And I think that, you know, what you're talking about is really concerning for Maryland, because even the first choice group isn't all, you know, isn't that great. So I think Maryland should be concerned. I know Penn State has done a good job stopping the run this year so far, and that's something Maryland usually can do pretty well. So I'm kind of curious to see how that shakes out, but could be an issue for them on Friday.
You mentioned Maryland's ability to, quote, stop the run, Emily. They're giving up just 74 yards per game. Is that a combination of Maryland? Is it Maryland the way they're playing defensively, or is it a combination of the teams that have also played and how they play?
Right. I mean, I think it's always going to be a little bit of both, but Maryland has answered a lot of questions on defense so far. There have been a few issues, you know, with playing balls in the air and the secondary, but up front in the linebacking group have been great. And there was a real point of concern back in the spring, and by the fall it started to feel like it was coming together. Maryland replaced its entire defensive line, but then had two grad transfers at outside linebacker with Shaq Smith and Keandre Jones, who have both been fantastic. And I think that's really helping, too, with getting some pressure on the quarterback and kind of everyone being able to help stop the run. But, yeah, no, that's been something that has seemed to be going – seemed to gone really well through these first three games.
What has it also meant that Smith and Jones, as Mike talked about this, being from, quote, winning programs, Jones from Ohio State, Smith from Clemson, does that help in the locker room of guys that have been around the block of winning teams?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of Mike Locksley's favorite things to talk about. So, and of course, he comes from Alabama. So it's kind of this, they get it. Like, they get what he's looking for and what he's trying to instill at Maryland. Because I do think there's a cultural difference in being with a team that wins 10, 11, 12 games a year versus a team that wins 4 or 5. There's just a different mentality. And, you know, like, Locksley has told a story a couple times where he heard from an equipment manager or someone like that, that Shaq told someone, hey, like, that's not how you keep your locker. Like, you got to clean it up a little bit. You know, we've got to be ready to have recruits in here. And just little things like that, I think Locksley really appreciates. And we were just talking to Brian Cobb, the receiver, yesterday, and we were talking about the discipline needed to limit the penalties, which Maryland has done much better this year. And he was liking it to the fact that they don't have T-shirts hanging out at practice. They're all their uniforms look perfect and everything like that. So I think there's a real sense of kind of that discipline you see with programs like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and Locksley has mentioned multiple times that he thinks both those guys really bring that into this locker room.
Mike Locksley had a head coaching experience before this. Now, he was the interim coach against Penn State when they played down at Raven Stadium, which was the Bank of the Month Stadium, whatever they call it now. But before that, he was at New Mexico State, and on and off the field, it did not go well. What did he learn from that experience that he is now applying so that he is a better head coach this time through?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's really interesting. It's been a while. I think anyone kind of grows and learns and through time, but it's not just time for him. It's that he's been around, you know, Alabama, and I think he's really taken a lot from the way Alabama ran or still runs its program, and kind of trying to implement that here while also understanding it's different. I think a lot of it came into play when he was hiring a staff and just being slower and methodical with picking who he's, you know, surrounding himself with. That's something he's mentioned. Another thing that's kind of interesting is that he has multiple guys on his staff who have been head coaches before. So yes. I think there's a lot of, you know, insight and experience in the coaching meeting rooms. I think there are a lot of people who kind of been around the block and know what this is all about. So I think it all makes him a much better candidate. And I will say up here, it certainly seems like, and obviously this is Maryland fans this is coming from, but they are far more likely to cling to what he did at Alabama than New Mexico. I think they kind of see that as something of the past and don't put too much weight on what happened there.
Well, I'm not thinking about other people. I'm thinking about him. I don't care what anybody does. You know, you think about the bad moments in your life. We all have where you just, it's there. Like, nobody else may bring it up, but you know it's there. I'm just wondering where he learned from that to make himself a better coach, and it's not just going to the Alabama halfway house.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about him is he doesn't necessarily shy away from it. You know, like, he talks about, he's willing to mention how he's a lot different as a head coach then. And but I do think Alabama plays a role in it. And then he came to Maryland, and he was the interim coach, and I think he learned a lot from that, too. And
yes.
And I just think he's, you know, I wouldn't say, like, mature. Like, I'm sure he was just as mature as a 30-year-old. But you know what I'm saying? But, like, I think there's something like wisdom. You know, it sounds a little cliche to say that. But I think he's experienced things, and he knows what not to do, and he knows how to run a program and kind of keep people in line and get what he wants out of them. And he always says habits and behavior, and it sounds very Alabama-ish. And I think he's trying to instill that from the top down, and what he expects of the coaching staff and what he expects from the players, and kind of keeps that high standard. He kind of says you draw the line in the sand of what's expected on the field, off the field, and kind of hold everyone to that standard.
All right, let's get to McFarland and Leak. What did they do to make an offensive line even better?
Yeah, I mean, McFarland just, he makes guys miss. He's quick, and he always just seems like he has a few steps on people. You know, it's like it doesn't take him long to get going and to accelerate. Of course, we're coming off of the game where he had four chances to get a yard and he couldn't do it. But everyone has said, you know, Javon Leak just said 2 days ago, he's like, I'd take Anthony anytime on fourth and one. Javon Leak is super fast. I think it's one of the best running back rooms in the conference. And you know, I don't know what it takes for Maryland to really get the credit they deserve. I think they just need to start winning some more games. But I do think they're deep. Teyon Fleet Davis is really good too. Lashley hasn't used the third guy quite as much until the game gets lopsided. But I think they really bring different qualities to the table. And I think Anthony McFarland is fantastic. I think he can be really great. And he's just those explosive plays. I mean, there's some where he'll three guys are on him and he somehow gets free and gets their 10 yards. Like stuff like that where it's like, that's not normal. And that's something that extends drives. That's something that, you know, changes a game when you can have a guy who makes plays like that.
And finally, the atmosphere coming up on Friday night. Obviously, it's 8 o'clock. It's a blackout. Now, for parking, they've closed campus. I mean, you know, that's the reason it is because they need parking spaces. In the area, what is the vibe about this game? Because obviously the Redskins are not very good.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a buzz around the program that hasn't been there before. And a lot of this was coming to be before the Temple game, so I am interested to see what it looks like. I think it helps that it's a Friday night. You know, if you're a college kid, I think it's a lot more appealing to go to a game on a Friday night than a Saturday at noon.
Right.
So I think it will be good. They had a historic number of student ticket demand, and like that's something that's been kind of an issue. The student section is not great in terms of volume. So they've like added bleachers up to the concourse to accommodate more students, which is quite something. I think it'll be a good environment. I would worry, I guess, if Maryland gets down early, I think then it could fizzle a little bit. Students might leave and go elsewhere. But no, it should be good. And that combined with the fact that I think there will be a lot of Penn State fans, right? Like, I think there are going to be a lot of them there, and that adds to the environment, too. Obviously, on the other side, but again, just from an objective standpoint, I think it'll be a good night game atmosphere there.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us, and we look forward to seeing you Friday night.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve's on his way to the stadium. 6:30 tonight we'll have the airtime on WKOK and WKOK.com, Penn State, Maryland from College Park. Kickoff just after 8. Jack Hamm, Matt McGloin, Roger Corey, part of the broadcast too tonight. So because of Penn State here on WKOK, Shikellamy will be on 100.9, the Valley of the Braves at Central Mountain. Seawinds Grove Loyal Sock on Eagle 107. And then tomorrow night, Saturday night football on the Valley 100.9 with Lewisburg going up against Bloomsburg. That game will be played in Seawinds Grove at Harold L. Bullig Memorial Field. Also on the Valley will be Monday night football with the Pittsburgh Steelers looking for their first win of the year as they go up against the Cincinnati Bengals. And with that, we bring in our Steelers analyst, SteelersWire.com, Neil Coulong, in his weekly visit. As yes, the black and gold continues to move right along without number 7, Ben Roethlisberger.
That can and probably should be the most pertinent question now after watching where the Steelers have been without a healthy elbow on Roethlisberger, and I'm not even sure if his elbow has been healthy yet this season.
Right.
The fact that they don't have it really accentuate the amount of what they don't have across their entire offense. And we were saying before the segment started, this is more likely to get worse than it is to get better at this point.
Agreed.
And Sunday's not the last game they're going to lose this season by a long stretch. So,
hey, to be honest with you, they're in the running for Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's kind of a shame in a way because, you know, the unprecedented move in Kevin Colbert's tenure was to trade their first-round pick. And really unrelated to that is the other unprecedented move, which is likely playing the way that I'm seeing it now, likely playing for a top 10, maybe even top 5 draft pick. Miami seems pretty happy about the way things are going right now. And it really, one thing I don't think leads to the other, but it's a real difficult situation, I think, for Steelers fans to handle because I don't really see any relief. I mean, the last time we saw the team look really this woeful over 3 weeks to start a year was 2013. And in that season, they lost their starting center and they lost their linebacker about 30 plays into the year total.
Right.
That's a lot to make up in a short amount of time. They didn't have depth at either of those positions that year. That's difficult to overcome. Right now, you're not getting a high-level receiver back. You're not getting a high-level quarterback back. You're not going to be able to really grow into that. They have no playmaking ability on offense. Eventually, the offensive line, which in my opinion at least has done better than a lot of people are claiming that they are, they're only going to go downhill from here. And a quarterback that is hanging onto the ball for far too long to throw screen passes is not helping the matters at all. And you put all of that onto a defense that it's in its, I think, 7th consecutive year of rebuilding. They're not going to be able to weather the storm over 4 quarters. And you put all these things together, and this looks like a 5-win team to me right now. That's really because they get to play Cincinnati twice.
It just seems so negative. I mean, I think you need an attitude adjustment. It just seems so negative.
I think I'm playing pretty even compared to what you're seeing from fans and social media.
I mean, I know.
Some of the arguments, I mean, it's knockdown, drag out, brawl time for a lot of them. And they're arguing over which side of the team right now is the worst. I mean, it's not even like
that's not
this
fun.
Is good. You just think that they're terrible because you're a hater. No, it's legitimately all right. Of this is bad, and it's an intriguing conversation of which one really is the worst. I'm not even sure which coordinator needs to go the fastest.
Right.
That's the argument. That's the discussion surrounding this team.
All right, so let me ask you about Mason Rudolph. It's 6 quarters worth of him right now. Do you see any sliver in the 6 quarters so far that show that he can be at least a competent NFL quarterback, or has he not shown any of those signs?
I think he's shown signs of it. At this point, I'm not sure he's on the same page with the coaching staff in terms of what their game plan can and should be. I thought the idea that they clearly tried to establish against San Francisco was to throw the ball short and try to get the chains moving that way because they're not really able to run the ball. Rudolph didn't look comfortable in a lot of those. I don't think that he's not finding his rhythm right now, if that makes sense. You watch him, there's something that seems off. A lot of it is footwork issues. These are common with younger quarterbacks, especially ones that haven't really played. There does take some rhythm to set up a screen pass. It's very much a timing play. Mm-hmm. They were awful in just completing screen passes. and they threw a ton of them, short stuff all over the field. But then you watch him when he drops back five and he hits Juju on a crosser over the middle. He hit him literally square in the face mask. I mean, it was like the textbook throw. And I'm not saying that we can put him in the Hall of Fame now because he shows he can make that throw. But to me, it's almost more like, okay, the short stuff didn't work for whatever reason. Let's try to open this up down the field a little bit more. Let's see what we might have with him that we're not seeing through the dink and duck, try to maintain possession sorts of stuff. I think he buys time well. I think he moves his feet well. I think he welcomes the pressure. He's not shying away from it, but the interception, I thought, you know, that was a pretty bad decision. Somehow or other, he didn't see the linebacker coming over. You can't be happy with that. But overall, there are some good things. But I think game planning right now, at the very least, for San Francisco, I think that held him back probably more as anything else did. I'd like to see a better, fairer representation of his skill set. I think they really apply the governor to him against San Francisco.
Right. And as I said, that's six quarters we're talking about here so far. I watch the Bears and Redskins. I mean, their quarterbacks are just a cut above him. like slightly.
Are they?
I mean, like slightly above him. Trubisky is really not terrific. Keenum's not that terrific. So, look, there's a lot of mediocre quarterback play in the league. All right, so now let's get to Minkah Fitzpatrick. What did you think of the overall deal? Now that you've seen him in a Steeler uniform, what are some elements that he can bring to the table that will help this defense, especially at the spot of the field he's in?
Here's the thing I came away with watching Fitzpatrick a second time. And I hate to say this kind of stuff because it really sounds Spanish, but bottom line is I rarely ever didn't see him around the ball. And I don't think that was by design from San Francisco. I think he moved to the ball. His interception was the result of him being by the ball.
Right.
I joked about this on Twitter. I'm not sure how, you know, joking I needed to be, but I think Fitzpatrick made that interception and Davis wouldn't have, simply because Fitzpatrick would have been around the ball. I'm not positive Davis would have been. It didn't look like a win outside of the fact that the receiver kind of biffed it, but the fact is he was there. The fact is he was by the ball to have a fumble recovery. He's making plays, and we haven't seen a Steelers defensive back make plays since 43 was out there, and that was a long time ago, all things considered.
Yeah.
He's also a very young player. This is not, you know, really, he is still, he's much closer to a rookie than he is a seasoned
player. I want to say he's 22 right now.
Yeah. I think he just turned 23, or he's going to turn 23 in the season. He's a very young football player, but you have to love his athleticism. You have to love his versatility. His background speaks for itself. We're past giving him all those accolades, but you watch him on the field, he wants to be around the ball. He's an aggressive defender. The Steelers have needed that in their secondary for a while, and I think he added that dimension for them, in which at the very least, they can exploit a few mistakes from the offense, of which this particular offense made tons, and the Steelers offense couldn't convert on anything. But over time, you're not going to get 6 points off three turnovers very often. I mean, that hopefully that stat changes and pretty quick. But you probably weren't getting a lot of those without him being on the field, simply because he's around the ball. He wants to make plays on the ball. He's aggressive. So for me, I'm still very excited about it, even if this is going to be a year in which they're drafting the highest that they have in Kevin Colbert's tenure. He's still a valuable addition to the team. He's still somebody that they can build a lot around. And by the looks of things right now, they're going to have to rebuild a lot of things defensively. And he's somebody that gives them a baseline off which they can build a foundation. They've been trying to do for a long time, but maybe he's the best player they've had in a long time.
Three games in, where's Devin Bush to you?
Not where I'd like him to be. And that I'm grading with a pretty aggressive curve, simply because he's going to have to be out there every snap.
Yeah.
I've had some issues just fundamentally with him, things that I would have expected him to be better with. And I'm sure Keith Butler is giving him plenty of that feedback. I'm sure Mike Tomlin's giving him plenty of that feedback. He has not been good, not the type of player I don't want to say you have to expect more from the 10th overall pick and blah, 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 but the Steelers gave up more than just, you know, drafting the guy at 10 overall. They gave up a lot of capital in a year that they need capital to get him. That's how important they felt that position was to their current and future defense and how well he fit with that. I'd expect a little bit more from him than what I'm seeing right now. I'm not saying, you know, it's time to toss him overboard and start over, but he's got to get better. He's got to do some things mentally that we haven't quite seen yet in his first three games. I'm confident that he will get there, but part of that process is going to be, you know, learning the hard way. And I'm sure he's had a couple tough film reviews right now.
I broadcast enough games in my career where I do have a really good understanding about how hard it is to play when your margin of error is small. The Steelers haven't really been in that spot very often. What kind of challenge is this for the coaching staff in order to coach games where they know the margin of error is really thin?
I'll be honest, and I'm not a coach basher. I hate doing that. I get turned off by people that do that. But right now, I really don't know what the coaching staff is trying to accomplish. It's hard to see if they're even aware of what the margin of error is. We're seeing, you know, like everybody, I'm sick and tired of hearing about the communication issues they're having on defense. They've been having communication issues since Butler took over. I don't understand the problem. Do they all speak different languages? There's no logical explanation why you should have a start to a season defensively be exactly the same for four consecutive years, as negative as that's been for the Steelers. I really don't understand what Butler is teaching them, but it's yet again not working. They yet again have another rookie that they have to rely on for too much to do too much if other people around them aren't able to do it. People talk all the time about how they need to communicate better, they need to simplify things. What are they doing in the offseason to make the defense that complex weeks 1 through 4 every year? Why does that continue to happen? I don't understand how long his rope is, but it really can't be much longer because it's a disaster, and it's the same type of thing every single year. And now you look around, people talk about the talent level that's on the team, the amount of investment that's gone into the Steelers' defense, up to and including the only first-round pick this team has traded in season in its history, as far as I know. I think that's the case, certainly under Kevin Colbert. You can't possibly have more assets given to you as a defensive coordinator. I'm sure his peers around the league just think about him and hate him. You know, who else is getting this much from ownership and management to be successful? Who has a longer rope right now than Keith Butler? I'm not sure who that is, but defensively it's a disaster yet again, and they could not possibly have put more into this defense than they have. Something needs to change in a drastic way very, very quickly. And I'm at the point now where the season's almost over for the Steelers. If a move-in season needs to be made, that's fine. I'm not usually somebody who believes in that, but we've heard up and down how they need to fix it, how they need to get to work. He's been given that opportunity. I think a new leader is probably needed, and I think it wouldn't surprise me if we start hearing about that sooner rather than later.
Just when all seems lost, the Cincinnati Bengals show up. What are your thoughts on Monday night?
The only team that's more confusing as to what they're trying to do than the Steelers right now to me is the Bengals. The Dolphins, we get what the Dolphins are doing. That seems plain and obvious. Whatever it is, you can't rule out we're trying to lose the game and look like we're still playing. The Bengals are just lost for the most part. You've seen a few flashes of things here and there, and maybe it's just the pessimism regarding the Steelers that overtake me in this. But in a lot of ways, I can see why the Bengals might be more competitive right now than the Steelers have been. Week one, I liked what they did against Seattle. It wasn't a whole lot different than what the Steelers did, and the Steelers had to change, obviously change their quarterbacks, and with it kind of change their game plan a little bit. I think Cincinnati embraced that concept a little bit better than the Steelers did. It wasn't until Rudolph got hot that they started really moving the ball, but Cincinnati should probably be a little bit better than what they are right now. The fact that this game's on Monday night in Pittsburgh, I would want to take Pittsburgh to win this game, but I said that last year against the Chargers, and that didn't work out very well for me. So you want to take Pittsburgh. You really should, and maybe I'm just bitter, but I think Pittsburgh is probably a better team, and I really think this is that the seat is plenty warm under several coaches and players leading into this week. I think there's a little bit more of a curve in Cincinnati than there is in Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh's going to have a more of an opportunity to get things together and you know play some reasonable looking football this week than they have. Cincinnati's going to struggle this season. We knew that they were going to. So I give Pittsburgh this one, but it wouldn't surprise me if this is like a 13-10 dumpster fire style game.
Neil, it's always a pleasure. I really appreciate it. Great analysis.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.